When I was a child growing up on the East Coast, and those of you who grew up on the East Coast will identify with this, there was something we called a snow day. Snow, by the way, is this very cold substance that falls from the sky that you probably go to visit, but actually, if you live on the East, happens to you. And what happened was that every school would be assigned a number, and on days when there was snow, they would call the numbers off on the radio. And you would turn on, this probably still do, and you turn on the radio, a couple of different, usually the news stations, and the announcer would read off school 2,423, 2,400, and you would wait for your school to be called. And it was a celebration if, in fact, your school was called. You couldn't actually call the school and ask if you would be off. They would tell you, listen to the radio. And it was wonderful, except when it wasn't. I learned to drive in snow, and that wasn't so wonderful. My first accident was on ice, and I tried to tell my father it wasn't my fault, but I hit a parked car. So he didn't believe that it wasn't my, that the other driver was responsible. But I bring all this up because I want those of you who grew up in different climates to understand that when you live in a place where the climate changes, the weather report matters. Why they have weather reports in Los Angeles, I can't figure out. Tomorrow will be 81, down from 83. As though, thank God I got that news, because otherwise I wouldn't know tomorrow how to dress. And that's why when summer comes around in Los Angeles, it's not a huge change. On the East Coast, summer was no more snow, no more scudding winds and rain and cold. Here, it's the same temperature, but let's wear shorts. That's summer. But the real change, of course, is not in the external conditions, because if I plopped you in LA and said, what month is it? It'd be very hard to guess. But in the fact that summer is when kids are off from school and businesses slow down and people take trips. That's the real change. And so people don't say, I'm making spring plans or fall plans, but they do make summer plans. Because not as a result of the weather, but as a result of our schedule, the summer stretches in front of us. It's never as long as we expect, but it stretches in front of us, and we have the chance to think in advance, what am I going to do with this summer? So as you might imagine, I have some suggestions. Since the summer is almost upon us, the first thing that I want to suggest is that if you are traveling and you have not yet firmed up your travel plans, especially if you have never done it before, go to Israel. Here's the Jewish condition throughout history. For thousands of years, Jews prayed, wept, hoped for the opportunity to go to Israel, and today, you can. In fact, the difference between, say, going to Paris and going to Israel is you call the travel agent and say, I'd like a ticket to Tel Aviv. That's it. That's the only difference. If you want a more elaborate and in many ways more interesting and educational tour, you can accompany the cantor who is going to Germany and to Israel with cantors who will be not only leading the trip but also singing and taking this journey of healing and hope. But however you decide to do it, I'd like to make it realistic. Most people think it's not realistic, but actually all you do is you get on a plane, and when you get off, you're in Israel. And they say, oh, it's a long plane ride. Yes, it is a long plane ride. To go all the way across the world, you must sit for a couple extra hours. A journey that used to take months and months and months, and who knew if you would get there. But really, it is miraculous that all you have to do to get to Israel is decide, I'm going to go to Israel. So the first thing I want to encourage is, if it's not in your summer plans, and it is possible for you to do, especially if you have never been there, don't say, I'll go next year, or the year after, or the year after that, because life is uncertain, and you have now. So go. See what the Jewish people has done with the state for the first time in thousands of years. If you miss that, you're really missing something. Now, whether you go to Israel or not, you should take the summer to do something, a small, discreet thing that will allow you to grow as a Jew. You could, for example, read a Jewish book. I'm not telling you have to read a library. But if you've never sat down and read the book of Genesis, yeah, you come to synagogue, you know they read it, but sometimes you daydream. It'll take you a couple hours out of your summer, and you might like it enough to read it twice. Maybe you vaguely know what Abraham did and what Isaac did, but you're not so clear on the stories, and every time the rabbi says it, it's new. But this is the Torah. You should actually sit down and read it. Even if you don't read all five books, although I'd recommend that too, pick one. And if you feel like you know the five books, pick a different book from the Torah you've never read. If you've never read Ecclesiastes, or you've never read Ruth, or you've never read Job, you don't need it on my authority, but take it from me, there's some great stuff in there. And you should read it. And the summer is the time. And you don't even have to read it all at once. You can read a chapter a day and think about it. And at the end of the summer, you'll say, I really grew as a Jewish adult in a way that I didn't expect. Because now I feel like I know what this is. Or take on a ritual. If you don't light Shabbat candles, say, for the duration of the summer, I'm going to light Shabbat candles. Or when I get up in the morning, I'm going to say Modeh Ani, or some other prayer that appeals to you, just that. In other words, don't do everything, but don't do nothing. Do something. Franz Rosenzweig, who became one of the leading Jewish philosophers of the 20th century and died tragically young in his early 40s of what we now call Lou Gehrig's disease, of ALS. In fact, he wrote his last book by blinking when you would run your hand over the typewriter and he would blink, and then the secretary would push the button on the typewriter that he intended. That's how painstaking it was at the end of his life. But early in his life, he decided to convert to Christianity. He knew almost nothing about Judaism, and he didn't care much for it, and he lived in Germany, and everyone was Christian, and he was a philosopher, and he was going to convert, but he figured he ought to go out of Judaism as a Jew. So until he converted, he was going to live as a Jew, so he went to services on Yom Kippur. And when he left the synagogue, he decided not to convert. And he began to write works of Jewish philosophy, and this is what he taught us about ritual. He said, when someone asks you, if you do a certain ritual, like you light candles, or you put on tefillin, or you wear a tallit, or you come to synagogue on Saturday morning, and you don't do it, if someone asks you, don't say no. Say, not yet. But you have to mean it. You can't go around your whole life saying, not yet, not yet, not yet. His idea was, nobody expects everything. But the Jewish tradition, God, you yourself have a right to expect growth. To be a little bit further down the road than you were the year before. Now, in the course of the year, 1,000 things rush in. But you actually have time now to plan something. Something manageable, something bite-sized, something small that you can do during the summer, whether it's a trip, a book, a ritual, a conversation, whatever it is, that will advance your Jewish learning so that at the end of the summer, you'll be a little bit further along than you were at the beginning. In some ways, it's better to think about it now than it is on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. Because once Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur are over, work rushes in and it becomes very difficult then to remember the resolutions that you made the day before. But now, things will slow down. And you have the time. And you have the space. And the reason to do it is because of your most precious possession, your soul. In fact, better than saying you have a soul is to say you are a soul. And you are the custodian of your soul. And how sad it is to think that everything that you really treasure, you want to improve. If you have a garden, you work to make it prettier. If you have a home, you clean it. If you make meals, you always want to make them more delicious. Why wouldn't you want to improve that which is most precious, which is your soul? So think about something that you can do this summer that will grow your soul, so that at the end of the summer you will have had long, beautiful days at the beach or whatever trip you take apart from the one I'm suggesting, and you'll think that you had a wonderful time, but also that you did something that grew you in your own eyes and in God's eyes. The first word of our Torah portion that we name, actually it's not the first word, but of the second sentence that we name it after, is naso. And naso usually means count. But it also means to lift up. Because when you raise yourself, you are more likely to be counted. So, this summer, raise yourself. I want to close by telling you one story. The Marquis of Brandenburg. When he died, an envelope was found on his desk. It was sent to him by a man named Johann Sebastian Bach. But he never opened it. When they opened it after he died, what they found inside were what then became called the Brandenburg Concertos. So Bach sent to this man one of the great masterworks of classical music, and the guy never bothered to open the envelope. There's a lesson in that. The Jewish tradition is the envelope. It is filled with riches. Don't leave it on your desk. Open it, learn from it, and grow. And have a wonderful summer. Shabbat Shalom.